now. Several people have already mentioned clustering in their talks. So what I'm going to do is give a brief introduction to clustering in the beginning, some of the issues that are involved. And then I will talk about three things. So the latter half of part one will be on clustering a graph. Now, several of you might know that spectral clustering or spectral methods can be used for that. And what I will show to you is that some of the objectives that are used in spectral clustering can actually be done by a k-means algorithm. And the objectives are mathematically identical. So that's the surprising equivalence, and we'll use it to develop a fast multi-level method that optimizes some of these graph cuts. So that is joint work with my student Yu-Chiang Guan, who's already graduated, and Brian Kulis, who's sitting right there. Right. Okay. And then in the second part of my talk, and again, this will be a self-contained part of the talk, I will talk about clustering with some generalized distance measures. So that's a very important part in clustering. What distance measure should you use when you're clustering? And I'll talk about a family of distance measures that are known by the name of Bregman distances or Bregman divergences. And finally, I will talk about this topic, which is a favorite of mine, which is given a two-dimensional matrix, could be also multidimensional. You want to cluster both the rows and the columns, and related to some topics that have already been covered out here on matrix approximations. And this will be a very, very different kind of matrix approximation than what has been seen here. And for example, Yuval Kluger has employed co-clustering on gene expression data, and so have we. Okay, so part one. I remember my advisor telling me about 10 years ago that one of his funding managers told him, you know, about 30, 40 years ago, I was funding a particular problem. How to solve AX equal to B efficiently. But even these days, I seem to be funding the same problem. Okay. And the question is, why have solution of linear systems, why has funding been required? Well, because we have different kinds of matrices, we have discovered new structure, we have now randomized methods, and so on. Clustering, in some sense, has been like that. It's been around for long period of time. If you go to data mining and machine learning conferences, even other places, there are many, many, many clustering papers. Okay. So the reason is, why are there so many clustering papers? Well, this is the generic slide on where clustering can be used. Bioinformatics, Yuval Kluger has used it. You want to identify similar genes, so you may want to do some functional prediction on what genes do. You want to organize document collections. You may want to cluster search results. And then something which is important right now is clustering on graphs, social network analysis. You want to identify similar groups of people. So what is clustering? Okay. Well, here is a formal definition. Is to You have a group of you have a bunch of objects, and you want to partition them in some way so that objects within the same group are similar to each other, and objects that are in different groups are dissimilar to each other. Okay. So the things that I have put in bold, you have question marks. How do you want to partition? Do you want to partition so that every object belongs to a cluster? Do you want to partition so that it's a disjoint partitioning, or do you want to associate each object with many clusters? How do you represent objects? Suppose I want to cluster the people in this room. Well, I could cluster them based on their images, or I could take CVs of everyone out here and try to cluster those. So how do you represent objects? That's a very important part of clustering. And then, of course, this notion of similarity and dissimilarity. Okay. What do you mean when you say one object is similar to another? So how is the data represented? Choice of the distance measure and the kind of clustering that's desired. So because there are so many of these issues involved, and really, it's almost like good clustering is in the eyes of the beholder, of the application beholder, right? Because really it depends upon the application, what kind of clustering you might want. So, you know, I'm very wary of people who will say that, look, I have the best clustering algorithm. So, it's really not possible to design one algorithm that will work in all these wide variety of situations. And then, of course, one thing that is important to realize, and that's one of the reasons for the popularity of clustering, is that it is not most of the times when people use it in industry, they want to try and get a very quick feel of what their data looks like. It's an important problem in unsupervised learning. It's not an end in itself. They just don't utilize a clustering algorithm, look at the clusters, they're happy, and then they go home. Okay? Usually, it's a means towards a different end. So for example, people at Yahoo want to do some clustering because in the end, they want to do some prediction. And oftentimes, it's a means towards an end. So these are the issues that I mentioned. How do you represent the data? Okay. So some of the talks that we've already seen on clustering have talked about the k-center or the k-means problem. And usually there, you assume that you have data as finite dimensional vectors, all of the same dimension. Okay. So you can represent the data as vectors. You could do that, for example, when you take documents, you parse out the words, and you represent your document as a long, long vector containing non-zeros at the positions where the corresponding word is contained in the document or not. You might represent the data by graphs. For example, the people in this room, I could actually form a co-authorship network or a co-authorship graph. You might have sequences. So for example, if you're visiting web pages, okay, the web pages that you visit could be represented by a sequence, and the length of that sequence could be different for all the different users out here. What if I want to represent a tree, trees? Well, strings. So for that, people have said, well, you can try and represent your, not objects itself, but just a similarity or a distance matrix. Okay. And then, you know, if you say, look, you know, there's a site on the web, well, there are plenty of sites called pickaprof.com. Undergraduate students use it to see the grades assigned by different professors, and they sometimes can use it to try and figure out what courses to take. So, you know, my behavior in one course might be somewhat different than my behavior in the other course. My grading pattern in one course might be different from my grading pattern in another course. So sometimes you can represent data as each object itself as a probability distribution. Because I have some prior, grade in a certain way, I can represent myself as a probability distribution, and then my grading in a particular course are just samples from that distribution. So the data objects themselves could be distributions. Of course, I can't overstate the importance of the choice of a distance measure. Okay, and it can be application specific. I have a colleague who does inferences on phylogenetic trees. And so there the question is, how do you compare two phylogenetic trees? And then there are certain ways to compare two trees that are actually the distance. If you want to compute this distance between two trees, then that computation itself is NP-hard to compute exactly. Okay. So the computation of the distance might be very involved. And all these have to be taken into account when designing a clustering algorithm. Do you want to have a disjoint partitioning of the data, or do you want to have overlapping partitions? you might allow one object to belong to multiple clusters? Do you want all the points to belong to a cluster, or do you want to maybe just look out core sets or core clusters where everyone is very close to each other? So here is the generic example. How many clusters do you see? I expect the answer 4.
12.
Okay. So if you really get close to it, you can maybe see 5 or 6 clusters, right? If you're really far, or somewhere at the back of the room, you'll see 4. Now if you go really far, a mile away, you'll just see 1 cluster. Okay, so that's actually an important point, because the clustering depends upon the scale at which you're looking at the data. So here I can say, well, partition this into 4 clusters, and there is the k-center problem that's being talked about, where you want to minimize the squared Euclidean distance from points to their cluster centers or the cluster means. Okay. And this is a very, very popular algorithm. I've heard someone referring it to Lloyd. Lloyd Max, it's also called Lloyd Max algorithm. It's used in vector quantization. The names Forgy and McQueen in the 60s and maybe 50s, I think 60s, are associated with this algorithm. Okay, so it's the favorite algorithm and a favorite whipping boy also. Everyone sort of compares, you know, codes out their own k-means and says, ah, look, my clustering algorithm is better than k-means. But, well, what does k-means clustering when you use squared Euclidean distance? Well, in some sense, it has a notion of where the data is coming from. Okay. So what I will show in this, so this is actually a slide which is an advertisement for the second part of the talk, okay, part 2, that will happen after the break. Well, you can think of k-means clustering and the k-means clustering algorithm as arising from an EM, expectation maximization algorithm, where you assume that the data is generated as a mixture of Gaussians. Okay. So when you have squared Euclidean distance, the Gaussian distribution is relevant. But you know, if you have data which comes from a different distribution, so for example, if it comes from a Poisson model, multinomial models are very used a lot in text classification. We will see that there is a family of probability distributions that are called the exponential family. And we will see that with each of them, there is a corresponding distance or divergence measure. And you know, this is going to come in the second part of the talk. So we'll see that if you have a spherical Gaussian, okay, isotropic Gaussian, covariance matrices, scalar of scale identity, you have the squared Euclidean distance. If you have multinomial, then the corresponding distance measure is the Kullback-Leibler divergence or the relative entropy. And if you have the exponential distribution, then it's the what's called the Itakura-Saito distance in speech processing or signal processing. And we'll see that these lead to generalizations of the k-means objective, where the appropriate distance, where the distance you're using is not the squared Euclidean distance, but it could be any of these distances. Okay. And so that's my advertisement for the second part of the talk. These Bregman divergences actually come up from the optimization community. They were used to solve, minimize a convex function subject to some constraints. So these Bregman divergences are distance measures that are generated by seed convex functions. And they are actually very neat. They, you know, the more I study them, the more they seem to arise. Okay, so given what kind of algorithm could we use? Well, in broad, you can partition, you can divide the algorithms into two parts. One are agglomerative algorithms. Okay. So agglomerative algorithms are bottom-up algorithms, where you start from each point or object being in its own cluster, being a cluster by itself, And then at every step in the algorithm, you merge. Well, in the first step, you say, what are the closest pair of points? You merge them. And then you look at the next closest pair of points, you merge them, and so on. But at some point in time, you have to start merging clusters. Okay? So there's an underlying distance measure between the points, but then the logarithm algorithms have to make a choice as to what, how do they measure the distance between two clusters. So for example, if you say that one cluster, and there's two clusters out here, and if you say that, well, I'm just going to take the distance between two clusters to be the minimum distance between pairs of points in this cluster. Well, then you get the single link algorithm, and you get kind of get, you know, clusters that are elongated in shape. Then if you say, well, the distance between two clusters is actually the maximum distance between points in this cluster. So you want points, all the points within the cluster to be similar to each other. Then you get complete link, and then the compromise is something where you take pairwise distances between all the objects in the cluster. And typically, these algorithms are not driven by an objective. They're just there's no mathematical objective function. But you can have variants where you say, okay, there is a global objective function, and now every step that I will do in the agglomerative algorithm, I will try and optimize this objective function only allowed this agglomerative step of merging two clusters. So it's called, if you look at the classic book by Duda and Hardin from 73, it's called stepwise optimal algorithms. And agglomerative algorithms are expensive, but they also have their place. One of my colleagues has a nice way of looking at it. He says, well, if you want very few objects within each cluster, you have many objects, then in some sense in the agglomerative tree or the dendrogram you're near the bottom, it might make sense to use an agglomerative algorithm. But if you have many data points and if you have not too many clusters, so the number of points in each cluster is a lot, then you might want to do partitional algorithms. Partitional algorithm means you have all the points, and then you start chopping up space, let's say, and you start dividing up your entire set of objects into clusters. So the k-means algorithm or the k-center algorithm is an example. The expectation maximization algorithm can be adapted for doing clustering. Now in the k-means algorithm, you saw that my cluster representative was the cluster center, or the cluster mean. That's a quantity of dimension zero. What you can do is you can extend your clustering, and where you say that you want your cluster representative to be an affine space of certain dimension. Okay? So you can have k-plane clustering, and this is work that Mangasarian did, and Paul Singh extended it, but the cluster representatives now can be planes or subspaces. And we also did some work in the bioinformatics context, which we call diametrical clustering, where you know, when you have gene expression data, when you have genes and you see their expression profiles, okay, certain biologists said, well, if you have a certain pattern, and then you have a pattern that has a correlation negative one with this pattern, okay, that's, you know, you can have, you can visualize it as, you know, you have a point vector on the unit sphere, and then you have a point antipodal to it, okay, minus x and minus x. And you might say that, well, in certain cases, that these two genes, okay, would be related to each other. One has expression like this, and the other has the exact opposite expression. And in this case, you want to put these two x and minus x on in the same cluster. So you want your cluster representative to be lines that pass through the sphere. And so these are cases, that's why clustering can be sometimes an art if you are really looking from the application point of view. So this is my introduction. So now I'm going to talk about clustering graphs. So this is a sample graph. It's a friendship network between high school students. You can have much larger graphs, such as the World Wide Web. And then the goal is to partition or cluster the nodes of a graph, given that the edge weights represent the similarity between the corresponding vertices. Okay, so now the question is, you have a graph, so set of vertices, set of edges. Edges represent similarities. So how would you try and measure the quality of a clustering of the nodes of a graph? Okay, you might say, well, the edges represent similarities, so if I want to partition into two groups, well, the cut value from one partition to another partition, which is the sum of the edges that cross over from one partition to the other, represent the similarity between the two clusters. So I want to search for that cut in the graph such that, I want to search for that those two partitions in the graph such that the cut value is minimized. That's a classic problem in computer science, minimum cut equal to max flow, Ford-Fulkerson, and so on. It's polynomial time solvable. The problem with that is typically large, when you have large graphs, you end to cut just very small portions of it. So this cut didn't have any notion of size built in, because you want your clusters to be not exactly balanced in size, but somehow fairly coherent. A problem that comes up, and people in UCLA, computer science and math, have looked at it, which is you are trying to partition circuits or elements in a circuit. Okay. So it's again a graph problem. You want to partition it such that the size of the vertices in each size of the two clusters are identical. And if you measure size just by the number of vertices, then that corresponds to the circuit layout problem where you want exactly the same number of elements on each part of the circuit. And then you want to try and minimize the length of the crossing or just the number of the crossing wires. But that's really not a natural restriction in data analysis. Why should two clusters be the same? Suppose I form a graph of all the people out here. Well, I want to cut it into two. Well, why should I put exactly the same number of people in one half and the same number of people in the other half? So people have come up with measures of cuts in the graph that are normalized by the size. So this is VI is the ith partition. So now I'm thinking of partitioning into k clusters. And I can look at the cut between VI and the rest of the graph that I call links. And then I can normalize either by the size of the partition, where size is measured by the number of vertices. Okay. And that was used called ratio cut and was used in the circuit scenario. And then Shi and Malik define what's called normalized cut, which is this cut from VI to the rest of the graph divided by the degree of VI. Now the degree of VI is just the total number of edges that come out of VI to the rest of the graph, including VI itself. Okay. So I like this criterion, and they used it in the context of image segmentation, just partitioning an image in itself. Okay. So we have objectives like this, and then the problem is you want to try and find these partitions VI and you want to minimize, let's say, this normalized cut. Okay, and I don't think I've stated it, but most of these clustering objectives are, it's a combinatorial problem, and most of these clustering objectives are NP hard, to get exact. Okay, so spectral clustering, many of you are familiar with it. We've heard many mentions to that. So what you can do is, well, you can look at the normalized cut objective. And it turns out that you can write your normalized cut objective as a quadratic optimization problem. It's maximization or minimization of a certain trace, okay, subject to some very hard constraints. Okay? And these are the structural constraints that say that points belong to certain clusters. What you can do is, well, you can remove these discrete constraints, and you can say, well, I'll just solve a real relaxation of this trace optimization problem, and then the global solution, globally optimal solution of the relaxed problem is given by the eigenvectors, okay? Or it's actually just the eigenspace of the k smallest eigenvectors, that is the eigenvectors that correspond to the smallest eigenvalues of what? Of the Laplacian. So the Laplacian is just a degree matrix minus the adjacency matrix. And that's what comes out when you use ratio cut. If you use normalized cut, there's a normalization by the degree matrix. So these are the generalized eigenvalues. If you look at the system Lx equals lambda dx, and you can take d on this left-hand side, and you can look at d minus half a d minus half. So d is a diagonal matrix of degrees, a is your symmetric adjacency matrix. So the Laplacian, the normalized Laplacian is ai minus d minus half a d minus half. Well, you compute these eigenvectors, but finally you want to recover the clustering or the partition. And then you need to somehow post-process these eigenvectors to obtain a discrete clustering, and then there are many ways to do this post-processing to obtain this. Now, the problem is that this can be quite expensive if many eigenvectors of a very large graph are to be computed. And Peter Jones in his talk referred to that. That, you know, this is, suppose you have a graph which has millions of nodes, and you want to do this, and you want to, say, form 100 clusters. Computing 100 eigenvectors of a very large graph, well, you can use Lanczos, or you can use some other techniques that are being developed. They're still going to be expensive, both in terms of time and in terms of storage. So that's the story with spectral clustering. Okay, I've told you about the k-means objective. Okay, now on the surface, k-means looks very different from this, from the objective of minimizing a normalized cut. So for the next couple of slides, I will show you that if you turbocharge k-means, you add a few things to k-means, okay, then the k-means objective will be identical to a spectral clustering objective. Think about the normalized cut. Okay, so here is the k-means algorithm. I've shown you a picture already, but this is a very simple description of how the algorithm works. It's an iterative process. You somehow initialize clusters. Then the computationally most expensive step in k-means is you look at the distance from every point, the points are represented as ai's, to the centers. You have k of these centers, okay? And then you select the, you do a greedy step, you say that I'm going to assign the cluster label of the center that's closest to. Once you do that, you then update the parameters, which is the cluster centers, and you can iterate. Okay? And this is the Lloyd-Max algorithm. that was talked about, and it has some properties. It has, you know, you can show that you have a global objective function, which is the sum of the square Euclidean distance from every point to its cluster centroid. That decreases monotonically as this algorithm proceeds. And then we saw a talk by Orlitsky, I think, on how to try and make this, you know, do some clever initialization according to probability distribution. And then I think he also had some thing he didn't talk about, but it was in the slide, about how to modify the computation of the centroids. He was only looking at, you know, this things that were really close to the centroid. Okay, so this is a fairly simple algorithm. The drawback of clustering, k-means clustering, is that it can only separate objects or vectors or points by linear separators. Okay, that's just a fact, and so people will sometimes draw pictures of, you know, two concentric circles. You have data like this, and I want to try and recover this as one cluster and this as another cluster, and then they'll say, oh, k-means doesn't do it. Well, obviously it cannot do it, because it's just going to do a linear separator. But there is a trick that you can do to k-means so that it can actually handle this, okay? Which is to go to a kernel version of k-means. Okay? So you think of taking your points AIs, you think of trying to map them to a higher dimensional space by some nonlinear function phi. Okay? So now your objective function becomes this. Okay? Notice that I've also added another quantity, because we'll need that, which is weights on the point. So this is a weighted kernel k-means objective. Okay? So here is a k-means. So normal k-means objective would have the wi's to be 1, and phi would be the identity. Okay? So that's the kernel, weighted kernel k-means objective. And what you can see is, it's a very simple calculation, but I could have written phi's out here, but for the moment, you know, just put phi's out here. Okay, so I can just expand this, and you can see that all you need in this computation, this is the distance computation from every point to its center, or to any center, all you need is inner products between data vectors. Now if I add phi's out here, then you need only, you don't need to actually explicitly compute the mapping phi, but all you need for this algorithm to proceed is if you can compute the inner products between the map vectors. And that's the whole kernel methods in machine learning. This is one example. You can formulate all your, you know, algorithm X using inner products, and you can write a paper saying, well, here is one way to kernelize it. That was being done quite a lot about 5 years ago. But this is an example, okay, of an algorithm. So this is now the algorithm. This is weighted kernel k-means algorithm. Okay? You initialize a cluster. You have a question?
How do you choose the kernel?
Yeah, so right now, suppose this is just weighted kernel k-means. Someone gives you a kernel, okay, and you run with it. Okay? And now, when I talk about the equivalence with a normalized cut, we'll see what the kernel should be. Okay? So for every vector AI and all the clusters, you do this distance computation. This is what's expanded out. And then you just choose the smallest. Now, is there one difference that you notice from the k-means algorithm? K-means is this iterative algorithm, right? E step and the M step. You estimate the distance, you figure out what partition it belongs to, and then you compute the center. There's no step here to compute the center, because the center is really defined by the other points, and it is because of the squared Euclidean distance that I can do this. There is no computation on the center.
Because in the case?
No, no, it doesn't decay. I mean, the way I'm going to compute DAI, comma C is by using this formula. So I only use the kernel matrix. So okay, if I have n points, I use this n by n similarity matrix. Okay. So there is no, if given the kernel matrix, there is no extra storage that's used by this algorithm.
Is it not likely that different A's will have different values for C star?
What's
so
that?
A will have a different value for C star.
Exactly.
But then you have not updated anything. Every point still stays the same.
No, no. You'll make lots of updates during the algorithm. So think about this. So you have n points, okay, and you. Initially, let's suppose you just randomly assign, you have two cluster centers. Okay? So every point will say, okay, which cluster center am I closest to? Okay? Suppose I am closest to cluster center 2. Okay? Petros asks the same question, and he gets cluster centroid 1. And so on, we all do this. And then we will now form a cluster centroid that is the average of all the points that said cluster centroid 1, and then the second centroid will be cluster centroid 2, and then you iterate. The cluster centers will move. I actually have, when I teach this in my course, I have a MATLAB demo that shows, you can, I thought about using it, but then I decided not to out here. You can choose your cluster centers by the mouse click, okay, and you can see the algorithm in action. And then by the end of the class, everyone's trying to make the algorithm break. Okay? And that's not how k-means can break quite easily. It's very sensitive to initialization.
So, if the mapping key is not linear, then the center must be twice.
I'm not going to compute it. So this is the conceptual. This is the conceptual mean. But I'm not going to compute. I don't need to compute. It's going to exist, but I'm not going to compute. Okay, so that's the weighted kernel k-means objective. And this is the corresponding algorithm. Okay, so I told you about normalized cut. Objective in a graph, and then I've told you about weighted kernel k-means. Okay, when you're asked to compute the normalized cut of a graph, well, what are you given? Adjacency matrix, the graph itself. Right? When someone asks you to do weighted kernel k-means, that was the question that was asked. Someone says, well, here's a kernel, go ahead and compute it. Okay? So what we can show is that this criterion, or in general, weighted graph cuts, are they're mathematically equivalent. So weighted graph cut objective is mathematically equivalent to a weighted kernel k-means object. Usually when people talk about spectral clustering, they say, oh, it's, and they talk about k-means, they don't really think of them. They think of them as very different. Okay. But, the more you think about it, that's why I've put surprising in quotes, there is a theoretical equivalence. And depends on how much you've looked at the problem. Whenever you get some equivalence, after getting the equivalence, it seems fairly trivial or fairly obvious. But this is mathematically identical. Okay. And I have lecture notes that just give a fairly brief derivation of this. And this follows by, because remember, the spectral clustering objective, the normalized cut I said, could be written as a trace maximization problem. Quadratic optimization problem. Well, there's clearly a quadratic problem out here. and you can show that they are mathematically equivalent. There are no ifs and buts and so on. But of course, if you are given a matrix, you have to choose a kernel. Okay? There is a kernel that corresponds to it. So for example, if you have a normalized cut, the degrees, the weights that I have to choose for each vertex, okay, are in kernel k-means is going to be the degree of the corresponding node in the graph. And the kernel that I will work with is essentially this, D inverse A, D inverse. Okay? And then for kernel methods to work and for me to guarantee that the algorithm will monotonically decrease the objective function, I need my kernel matrix to be positive. Okay? But you can just add a sigma, and you can add some quantity over here to make k to be positive semi-definite. Yeah, question.
When you say that there is an equivalence, do you mean after you made the relaxation of the...
No, this is the exact problem.
Exactly.
This is the
problem. No relaxation.
No relaxation.
But the constraints are different, right? I mean, when you... So it's the same objective, but usually you have, they have the different constraints.
What do you mean by constraints?
Well, they're both, they have an objective and you have some constraints. You're going to minimize the objective with the constraints. And
the constraints are that each point belongs to... Each in weighted kernel k-means, it's that each point belongs to a cluster. In a graph cluster, it is that each vertex belongs to a cluster. So I'm equating a point with a vertex. So they are mathematically identical.
But you do depend.
There's no ifs and buts.
You do dependence on the initialization of the procedure, which you did not have in the kernel procedure.
Right. So you're trying to talk about algorithm. I'm talking about the object, the mathematical object, right? The kernel k-means objective was given out here. This is the objective. Forget about algorithms. Okay? And then you have the normalized cut objective. Okay? So it is a little surprising, right? That they are mathematically identical. Like I said, no ifs and buts.
Is it minus one or minus half?
Minus one. That's what comes out of the analysis. You had a question?
Yeah, is this somewhat similar to mean shift, Comancheo's mean shift? It's like a kernel regression. Yeah, if I get that right. Relative kernel regression.
Right now I'm just going to focus on clustering, but the thing is that they are identical.
Okay.
Okay? So it is somewhat surprising, right? You have k-means on one side. I turbocharged it by adding weights to the points, and I added a kernel to the weighted kernel to k-means to get weighted kernel k-means. And then I had the spectral clustering object. Okay, now what does this mean? Well, now I can, if I want to try and minimize this quantity in a graph, well, I can use this algorithm. And this algorithm will now, at every iteration, decrease the normalized cut step by step, because it will decrease the objective function at every iteration. Okay. So the expensive part of computing eigenvectors, well, you don't need to do that. You can use weighted kernel k-means. Well, then, aha, weighted kernel k-means, is it a good algorithm? It's a suspect, you know, it's very subject to initialization, there's lots of problems, and high dimensionality does even worse, phi could be mapped to very high dimensional spaces. Okay, so what else can we do? Well, what we will do is we will use a multi-level approach, and we will then exploit the connection between weighted kernel k-means and spectral clustering objective to get a very, very fast outcome. Okay, so the idea behind these packages, Charco and Midas, these are multi-level approaches to doing graph partitioning. You form your initial graph, you coarsen the graph, you merge vertices, you make the graph smaller, 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 till it gets to be a tolerable size. You do some clustering over here, you get a partitioning over here, you lift this partitioning up to the next biggest graph, and then you refine the cluster.
You do the same, you refine the cluster, and you keep on doing it. So there is a package, very good package, called Midas that exists, but Midas was really built with circuit applications in mind. So it tries to make the vertex sizes exactly the same. But that's not natural in data analysis. So what we can do is, well, we can just use, in the refinement phase, we can use weighted kernel k-means. So from here, we'll get an initial clustering over here. We run a few iterations on weighted kernel k-means. We'll do that, do that, do that, and so on. And what's nice about these multi-level methods, and at least for partitioning, there is no real good theoretical analysis, is that they do really well in practice. Okay? And moreover, you use very, very simple things to coarse it, and fairly simple things to refine. So even the weighted kernel k-means by itself is not such a great algorithm. It's a simple method. This whole machinery is very powerful. So this is what we do. Phase one is coarsening. You coarsen the graph. Then you have the base clustering at the bottom. And then you do a refinement. You uncoarsen the graph level by level. And we use weighted kernel k-means. And you can actually do that weighted kernel k-means distance combination only in the terms of a graph. So for example, if the graphs have integer nodes, we actually don't need to do any floating point computation. We can just stay in the integer graph. Okay? So just fairly quickly, here are some experiments. So I've never been good at choosing names. We have a software package. And it looks like my students have the same problem. So this is the name of the package, software package, GradClus for graph clustering. And this is the spectral method. Okay? So this is a graph on 1381 genes. And this value is k, which is the number of partitions. So this was obviously not a connected graph. So the cut value is 0, but if you see 8, then the normalized cut value is 0.009. So that's, okay, that's GradClus, so we are better there than spectral. And you can see that, you know, in the terms of the normalized cut value we get, we're actually better than spectral in this case. Some other experiments, well, this is just the unordered gene by gene matrix. Again, it was 1381 by 1381. And if you just do a spy plot in MATLAB of the original matrix, you get something like this. And then the spy plot of the reordered matrix is this. And this is typical. But we have one reviewer who said, well, it can't be because there are more non-zeros here than over here. Yeah, but that's just some plotting software. Because you have to dots.
You prefer it also to one shot just spatial clustering and then run k-means on those centers in this area. Just no coarsening.
Yeah, so initially, right, so you are saying that don't do just one weighted kernel k-means, directly?
No, start with spatial.
Okay.
Get some clustering.
All right.
Take those as centers and just run k-means.
Yeah, we've
so that's like the
main part about our software and about the algorithm is that it's super fast. And so we don't actually want to compute algorithms. Okay. So this means something to the biologists apparently. This is a histidine biosynthesis pathway, this is something else. But this picture is, when we did Yuval is laughing at me, but all I know, you know, when we did clustering, then we were able to recover these genes in their clusters. By the way. Now here is the computation time is what's really the thing. 32 clusters on, let me just talk about this data set. This is the Internet Movie data set. And so what you can do is you can download this data set from, so this particular data set we have is 1.4 million nodes and 4.3 million edges. I guess it has what, right? It has movies and documentaries on one side and actors and directors and so on the other side. So it's a bipartite graph. But it's fairly big. It's 1.4 million nodes. And you might want to just partition it to see which actors and directors are similar to each other and what movies are similar to each other. Okay. And so it's a large graph. If you want to cluster into 256 clusters, if you try to compute 256 eigenvectors, 1.4 million, that's a lot. So in time and in storage, because you would have to store the eigenvectors.
But I think it's what Elon meant is something different.
What's that?
What Elon meant before is something different. It could like, I don't know, 5 or 6 or 10 eigenvectors, and then Duque came in with 256.
Sure, you can try that. I mean, we have this algorithm that's doing better than Spectral, and it's much faster. So someone can come up and say, okay, I'll try this variant and this variant. We use the state-of-the-art spectral algorithm and just compared it with what they had.
I think it's the Jordan and Weiss paper.
Yeah, Jordan and Weiss had an original paper, but there they were saying, well, you need to form this kernel and you need to do this eigenvectors. But by the way, spectral partitioning has been around for a long time. I mean, there was Donath and Hoffman at IBM did it really in 72, and the earliest reference I can find is a paper by Hall in 1969, where he was doing an assignment problem. So the fact that the use in machine learning is recent, but it's been around for decades. So here is the big time difference, right? The spectral method will take much more time than our multi-level method. And again, this is related to the comments that Peter Jones made about, you know, computing these eigenvectors of a large Laplace.
What was that Python, man?
The fact that we could not run spectral methods with 64 clusters.
The time?
Oh, God. We could not run them because of memory. Right? Because of memory. So we were not able to run them. Because the graph is really large, and if you require more number of clusters, and computing, you know, 256 eigenvectors of 1.4 million node graph becomes hard. And here is just, you know, some anecdotal evidence. So, you know, we generate 5,000 clusters, and you know, we get a sample cluster where you have, you know, Harry Potter movies and all the actors that appeared, or people who appeared in these movies. I'm not a big Harry Potter fan. Okay, and here is, you know, the original motivation of using normalized cut was in image segmentation by Shi and Malik. And well, we can adapt, we could use now this weighted kernel k-means algorithm and the multi-level implementation to do image segmentation. And here are just some graphs that not necessarily come from data mining, but just from other applications. So I guess, the largest one is out here, which has 1.4 million edges, okay? And computation time, we're just much faster than spectral methods. Because we've also engineered our software to be very fast. One guiding principle behind our software was we wanted to make it as fast as meters, or nearly as fast as meters. And meters is fast, and it's really state of the art for partitioning problems that come up, for example, in circuits. So you can see that we've normalized the computation time for spectral to be over here. So anything below this bar means that we are faster. Now we have several variants of our algorithms because, you know, kernel k-means, there are various bells and whistles that you can add to k-means algorithms like local search. You can initialize in different ways. You can actually initialize by a spectral method on the base graph, on the smallest graph that you get. Okay, so these are different variants. And then this is results for ratio cut or ratio association. And here is the quality. So when it comes to quality, what we say is that we do as well as spectral. Many cases slightly better, many cases a little bit worse. Okay. So, but when time becomes important, the weighted, the multi-level algorithm really makes a big difference. So hopefully I didn't surprise you by showing about, I didn't really show it, but telling you about this mathematical equivalence between graph clustering objectives and weighted kernel k-means objective. So now when you think of spectral clustering, you can think of k-means also, which is kind of a little off in the same light. But then we have a good implementation, and this implementation is fast because our input is a graph. It doesn't really, it becomes too expensive if the inputs are points, because then you have to form the graph. Okay? So our input itself is a graph, and because of that, we are able to get this fast multi-level algorithm. Okay? And it's significantly faster, and it requires, well, how much memory does it require? Nothing, just the original graph. And remember, the original graph was sparse, could be maybe sparse, and then we would only need the sparse graph for the sparse graph. Okay, so there is software that you can all play with. So if you are really interested in clustering your favorite graph, please go ahead and download the software, run it, and if you have any problems, give us feedback, because we are really interested in maintaining that software and making it fast. The corresponding paper is going to appear in November's issue of IEEE Transactions on Pattern Analysis and Machine Intelligence. And I had a chat with Gil Strang, who's writing a new textbook on computational science and engineering, and he wanted to make the book a little sexy, so he wanted to put some gene expression or gene, some biology in it, and he thought clustering would be a good way. And I don't know how much will finally appear in the book, but the last I talked to him, he was thinking of including spectral clustering, talking about k-means, and then showing the equivalence of weighted kernel k-means to spectral clustering objective. Because it's actually fairly simple, right? Once you write it down, so an undergraduate student could easily work it out. Okay? And you know, I've been intrigued by Peter Jones' comments that they need that this computation of the eigenfunctions is a bottleneck in other kinds of things that you are trying to do. So the sort of open problem or so is, can you turn this around? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Suppose now I want to compute eigenvectors of very large matrices. Or the Laplacians are very large matrices. Can I turn this around? I mean, if you think of it, this is a multi-level algorithm. I'm chopping things up, I'm doing things locally. So can I do that and somehow glue things together so that I can get compute the eigenvectors faster? And I don't say this lightly, because I was on a dissertation committee of some students in aerospace engineering at UT, and there's a person by the name Jeff Benninghoff there, and he has some software. This is totally in a different domain. It's in automobile car design, and they need to do some frequency analysis, shock analysis, and they were using a multi-level method, and they need to compute eigenvectors, mm-hmm. and they are using, and they apparently beat the pants of Nastrans, which is the leader in that kind of software. Okay, so there's a lot of work that needs to be done. He apparently didn't publish for 10 years, okay, and he just developed the software along with the students. So this would require a substantial amount of engineering, but it should be possible. You compute, because these are small eigenvectors of these matrices. So he was actually using MIDIS to cut his graph up, because when he does a finite element modeling of the graph, cuts it up, does small pieces, computes small eigenvectors of each piece, raises it up, projects onto those eigenvectors, and keeps on lifting it up. So this would be a great project for someone. Okay.